This is tape recording number 59011C13MACC-9. Copyright 1959 with all world performance rights reserved by L. Ron Hubbard, and is distributed by the HCO Tape Department worldwide, St. Hill, East Grinstead, England. This is the 9th lecture of the 1st Melbourne ACC.
Thank you. And here we are at the 13th of November in the 1st Melbourne ACC. And everybody doing pretty good, except you. Where'd they stick you in? Well, the upshot of the situation is, with regard to clearing, regard to OT, a few dozen other things, but you've got to know how to audit. If you go flipping into a weak valence, every time you face the PC, you go. Take the E-meter, you know, and you go. Drop it, you know. That's just a weak valence. Some PC all of a sudden says, "Meow." Up to that time, you're just doing fine, you know. And he said, "Meow." You said, "Pop." See? Weak valence. Now, just don't let me catch you doing that. You boot these things out. The way you got into one was pure laziness. It was so easy to communicate to something which pulled your line in. Got that? That was so easy. And the next thing you know, you just kept communicating that right there. You went in too. Now, there is a pleasure, which I am told it is akin to sexual pleasure. It's very much the same thing that you probably haven't experienced lately. It's called the joy of being eaten. You haven't experienced that in this lifetime. But it's a fact. It's a fact. It's an actual pleasure. Joy of being eaten. And there's recompense to sliding down that line. Of course, probably the main disappointment is when you've got at the totally weak pull-in effect point of the cause-distance effect line, you got at the totally weak effect point, it probably didn't have enough energy to eat you. You see this? The difficulties of communication are totally involved with you maintaining you. Now, how do you suppose I have communicated in the past? Well, very, very heavily in the past 12 or 13 years. It's all kinds of PCs, and mind you now, I've audited an awful lot of psychos and stuff like this. Audited a tremendous number of experimental processes. audited PCs with this total failures in all directions, you know, because I was bound and determined to make a process work out or not work out, regardless of what happened to the PC. You know. Overt act. Just overt acts by the ton. Well, you say sooner or later, Ronnie will slide down that line. You know. I'm still hitting at cause point. The basic reason for that is I don't have a pitch on auditing, you see. And today, an HGC PC wrote a note through with some franticness and said, why are you making, this is a paraphrase, but why are you making operating thetans, you're making operating thetans for some basic political purpose, you see, and two, are you making them to get back at the people in the implant areas? No, I'm making operating thetans to do anything. The answer, of course, is making operating thetans for their own sake and so they can be free. There's no pitch. There's no curve. And I don't always tell the truth, that I assure you. I learned a long time ago that there were two brands of lies. And after that, I could become a fiction writer. There were the lies that hurt people, you see. And then there were the lies told to involve them and twist them up and plow them in. The idea? Now, it's indicative of something in this society today that they say that all imaginative utterances are lies. So we have to pull back out of that and realize that one is perfectly free to create the past, present, or future. Okay? One's perfectly free to do that. Unless he creates it with a pitch to injure, enslave, or upset. Okay? You've got a big curve on the line. And an overt act, very definitely, is an overt act, basically in the PC's own consideration, but in the area of relative truth, see, not the absolute truths of the first axioms, and in the area of relative truth, an overt act is an overt act to the degree that it violates the optimum solution. Greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics. See? And when an action is taken which suppresses several dynamics and maybe benefits only one or two, that's an overt act. Got the idea? But it's the optimum solution is the degree of overtness of an overt act. Now, in view of the fact that there are only such a tiny handful of absolute truths, there is a Satan, you see, and he creates things. That's about it. In view of the fact that there's so few absolute truths, and that everything after that fact is created, you have been involved for many, many eons in the creation of an existence. And you had truth, or telling the truth, you see, substituted for and identified with doing the most good. Right, you got these two things crossed. Telling the truth isn't doing the most good. I could go out here and walk up and down the street and tell the truth for a half an hour, and there'd be about 20 suicides. You realize that? Matter of fact, that we don't have any of this Swami stuff in Scientology and Dianetics. Mostly because it's a super effort, you see, to hypnotize, overwhelm, and bring about worship. It's just nonsense. It's the creation of slavery. It is a real big overt act. A real big one. You know, tell everybody that you're in communication with Yahweh or Cheesewitz or some god, and he's just giving you the word, and use some perfectly obvious thing like reading the obvious symptoms on somebody's face or reactions or something like that. Or looking at his facsimiles, if you please. Reading his mind and so forth. Not to tell the truth about it, but to give him a big curve, see? Overwhelm him so he believes the lie sometimes. This is big, twisty stuff, you know, the effort not to create an effect, but the effort to make a slave. See, that's a different thing. So that truth is a word, actually, it doesn't even belong in the perimeter. There are facts. But the vast, we can't even say the vast majority, because it's practically all facts are simply created facts, which, agreed upon, have become truths. That's a very queasy world to walk into when you realize that. And when you're busy laying out these vast facts, these absolute truths, well, as a professor of physics, you're pretty safe. You're pretty safe. You can get away with teaching physics without totally plowing in. So long as you don't teach it as absolute and irrevocable facts, but will never be altered, changed, shifted in any way, shape, or form. Because here we come along and we can upset physics. Now, it's all right to teach something as absolute fact, quote unquote, if you say this absolute fact is apparently agreed to and held by most people. And those that don't hold it aren't here. But to that degree, it's an absolute fact. But beyond the first little handful of axioms, you see, there are no unalterable facts. All facts are alterable beyond the first few axioms. I know it kind of stretches your imagination to think that something like Boyle's law or laws of fulcrum and balances and so forth could be altered. Apparently that, but they're simply part of the agreements of the creation of this universe. As one agrees to this universe and agrees to its various laws and so forth, well, after all, these things are true, but they're true by agreement. So don't be too surprised someday if you take fulcrums and balances and set them up and put a 100-pound weight 1 foot away from the knife edge and a 2-pound weight 1 foot away from the knife edge and stand back and watch them balance. Because if you haven't subscribed or if you've canceled your subscription... on any of these agreements, they tend to cease to be true. Well, now, codes of conduct are efforts to delineate what are overt acts. We find most moral codes are simply a list of overt acts. And they're an attempt to get everybody to agree that these overt acts are overt acts. You know, they keep talking about the Ten Commandments. The only reason I talk about Christianity rather than another religion is you happen to know more about the tenets of Christianity than some other religion. It doesn't mean that Christianity is the worst of the best amongst religions, or actually the funniest. But it is true that this is the case, that they give out 10 commandments. And everybody says these 10 commandments are the 10 commandments, and that's well, so on. But you go back and read some of the earlier translations of the Bible, which weren't monkeyed with, to put a new pitch on the line, and you find out that there aren't 10 commandments. That's one of the first facts about the 10 commandments that aren't true. There aren't 10 commandments, that's it. Let's go on and on and on and on and on. I mean, I don't know how many there are. I got tired counting, or I could tell you right now. I think I stopped at about 162. There's such things as when you have killed a pig and found that its flesh was tainted, do not sell it to your neighbor. Sell it to the wayfarer and traveler, as he comes. That's in there. Now, these super absolute moral codes have liabilities, basically, because they're not true. Now, once in the blue moon, in this lifetime and others, why, some fellow has take thou shalt not kill, you know. Some fellow's jumped up, big as life, and knives in his teeth, and all that sort of thing, is going to hack down the kids or the family, or sink the ship, or do something of the sort, you know. Well, let's look at the dynamic balance here. See, you've got one fragment of the third dynamic is represented by this bird with a knife in his teeth, see? And the whole ruddy lot of the rest of them are under your protection. And at this moment, you're not going to kill, huh? Thou shalt not kill just falls by the wayside. It's an absolute code. It does. Boom, it's gone. And as I say, in this lifetime or earlier ones or that sort of thing, come up against this particular situation, why, as far as I was concerned, somebody bit the dust. I never considered it much of an overt act. It isn't. Got the idea? Friends, we've just been through a war, and the conduct of the Japanese in their original capture of Nanking demonstrated they were not very pleasant people, in the military form at least, to have around, no matter how pleasant they are in their houses at home. And they raped and slaughtered and burned around Nanking until there was practically nothing left of the thing. And when I looked that over, it wasn't an atrocity story. It wasn't an atrocity story, it was just a fact. They had a ball, and most of the Japanese troops misconducted themselves. So did white troops. So on, people get going on war and they don't know when to stop. I remember one sergeant going around during an amphibious landing toward the end of the war with a carbine butt knocking out the gold teeth out of the mouths of the wounded. He had a nice collection of gold when he finished up, but I thought it was a little extreme. But Now, overt acts tend to breed overt acts. And you enter in logic along this line someplace, and you can begin to speciously logicate out of existence all overt acts. You can explain how they're all logical. And there's fellows down here in the local jail right this minute. If you talk to them, they could explain, it's perfectly logical, absolutely perfectly logical, how all dynamics, having been violated except some fragment of a valence of the first, they're totally correct. See, it was totally correct to violate all dynamics all their life. It was so logical. So you see that it somehow or another takes judgment to experience in a society free conduct. You can't have a bunch of slaves and not have super moral codes and laws. Do you see that? In the absence of judgment, you have to have all kinds of laws. And you can just put it down in your book that the more laws there are, the less judgment there is. In the development of Dianetics and Scientology, as practitioners and theses were found to have less and less judgment, then more and more laws were developed. Got the idea? See? Auditor couldn't exercise judgment on the processing of a preclear. He couldn't see it himself, you see, and it wasn't obvious to him. We invented a law. I invented a law to point this fact out. Got the idea? Mm-hmm. Well, if you notice, I am very chary of adding more laws, because we're going in the more optimum direction of adding more judgment to the people. Got the idea? Entirely different look. Now, it isn't those laws don't help. They do. In fact, we wouldn't be where we are if we hadn't gotten some people over the rough points of them. So. But that's why I say every once in a while, I say, never under any circumstances do this, that, or the other thing with the PC. And then, certainly within a day or so, if not within the hour, you will also hear me say, judgment is necessary to auditing. And one of the ways of expressing that is, auditing is what you can get away with, which is an old saw, but a very true one. All the laws, notwithstanding, auditing is what you can get away with. And if you didn't get away with it, it's not auditing. Code breaks and everything else, okay? In living a free life, there's one thing that you give up. You give up, to some degree, a security against getting hanged. Because if a slave follows down an exact grooved course of conduct and always minds and obeys all the laws, every single law, he never gets hanged or punished, does he? Usually, he makes it. It's good, safe, stupid, and weak. And it is safe. Never moves a hair out of line. But there's a security connected with that. In a loose way, it's analogous to the fellow who holds down a job and gets a regular paycheck. It's a fairly safe job, and he isn't liable to be fired off of it. He never drives any Mercedes Benz, but he always eats. See? Life doesn't have any peaks. It doesn't have any abysses either. Security. An unchanging monotony. nothing really wrong with it. It's a method of living. One obeys certain laws and subscribes to certain codes, and after that, he's okay. Well, now this starts to go up the spout the moment you start introducing freedom. But the great empire, which Great Britain, under the socialist regime, gave up, the socialists bragged that at the beginning of the rule of the socialists, there were some 400 million people in the British Empire. And when they finished up, they only had 30 million people in it. Pretty good. And they've had nothing but riot, tumult, and revolution in a lot of those areas ever since. They gave out a lot of freedom, but they didn't give out any wisdom. A very serious error. The only way that they could have accomplished any proper end goal would have been to have either restored the original native law in some of these areas, or to have brought the people up to where they understood and could abide by English law, but not leave them halfway between, then just skip it. Judgment is the factor which has to be substituted for law. And a man can be as free as his judgment is rehabilitated. And that's as free as he'll ever get. Because oddly enough, he himself will discover himself making a mistake and then put laws on himself. If you don't do it for him, he'll do it for himself. He'll say, well, I must never do that again, as he watches the bashed-in head of the baby. And he just says, I must never do that again. He has said, in essence, without putting Article 4, Section 8, Code Penal, infanticide, the slaughtering of babies shall be accompanied by punishment. You see, I mean, that isn't the way he phrased it. He just says, well, that's a bad act. A bad, stupid, senseless act. And I am guilty of having accomplished one. And therefore, after this, I shall not do this. He makes up his own law and he says, I shall not kill babies. Bang. Get the idea? Men, they live within their own area. He almost never says to himself another thought. He says, well, if I'm going to be around babies, I've got to raise my judgment with regard to them. He doesn't do that. He usually puts on the emergency brakes and makes up a law. He doesn't really make an effort to further understand what he is having difficulty with and he's liable to make laws about. So you see, there were two choices he could make as he bashed the baby's head in. One of them was to make up a law, infanticide, I shall not commit infanticide, here and after as aforestated me. See, that was one direction. And he had an entirely different choice, which was, here and after as aforestated, if I can commit actions of this character with the consequences appertaining thereto, and I better not be so damn stupid about it, I better find out something about this, and I had better increase my judgment on the subject of babies. Now, that doesn't appear to be, to you, a very strange new thought, because you're you, and you're here, so you have already made that decision long ago. You've decided that the proper way to handle a given moral, legal, dynamic situation was by increased judgment. Long ago, you decided that. Or you wouldn't be here, you wouldn't be interested in dynamic Scientology. And the reason it's so hard to interest the police department in Dianetics and Scientology is most of these fellows have taken the entire opposite course. They bash in the head of a baby and they say, huh, there ought to be a law. I'll go out and make a law to make sure that I don't break it. I mustn't be so familiar with babies. Get the idea? There's almost two roots, you might say, two main roots toward decency or rightness or being able to walk in the sun with your head held up. There are two roots. One is to be very lawful, and the other is to have excellent judgment. And if you don't have excellent judgment, you've got to have lots of laws. If you don't have lots of laws, you've got to have excellent judgment. And that's the way it works. And therefore, particularly at this stage of the game, it behooves you to realize that you won't let yourself have more freedom than you feel you have judgment to cope with it. You're not going to let yourself, I don't care who runs what on you. I can blow you out of your head and turn you upside down and make you put out 100,000 kilowatts, see? Two. You take a look at that if you don't think you're ready for it. You'll be very agreeable and you'll go out and throw 100,000 kilowatts around for me if I ask you to. I know. Next day, well, you just tell your friends, well, that was an interesting experience. You're not going to throw 100,000 kilowatts around anymore. Well, sir. You apparently gotten well off and then spun ends, you know, gotten worse again. That wasn't what happened at all. Your capabilities were increased without the increased consequent increase of judgment. See? You increased your horsepower, but you knew you hadn't increased your judgment. So you wouldn't use that much horsepower. There's an old mystic yip-yap about thou shalt have the power from the mighty all-seeing Yahweh or Snitzpoo. That you showeth the ability to be trusted with. That's an all mystic law. Well, that's a nice other determined lot of bunk. The facts of the case are is you'll permit yourself to have as much power as you think you've got judgment for. And you won't let yourself have any more power than that. Now, judgment, therefore, is a subject which we have played with for many years. I won't tell you the subject of judgment's totally wrapped up. But I can tell you what judgment consists of. Judgment consists of familiarity and the ability to evaluate relative importance. Relative importances. Guy jumps on deck with a knife in his teeth. You don't want any stimulus response machine which just shoots him because he might be a friend of yours who was simply skin diving. You don't want a stimulus response machine that simply polishes him off. And you want judgment enough. Well, the judgment consists of the importance of the fact with relationship to its surroundings. And there he was, there he is. What are you going to do? What are you going to do to the degree that you recognize and observe and evaluate? You know why he's there and what is he and what he's doing and so forth. That all depends on fairly quick observation. The more laws you have, the less you observe. You settle into the security of just following the law, and one day the law goes out of style. There you are still following the law. And all of your aberrations are just laws that have gone out of style. You're still obeying laws that apply to the Minoan civilization. Laws which apply to the conduct of officers of spaceships of the Imperial Empire. No, I could dig some up right out of you right now. Article 62, Royal Code, 13th Galaxy Confederacy. Restriction of punishment of lower ratings. Something of this sort. Total nonsense. You find you've been applying it. You find that as a man, why, you knew exactly how hard to hit somebody. You see, if you had to hit them at all, you hit them just to this degree, and so forth. Possibly even made sure that they weren't near any gratings, so that you knocked them down any ladders. You know, there's certain ways and means. There was a definite amount of injury, which was all right to deliver, and that was in the Royal Code of God knows where, you see. Millions and millions and billions of years ago. Still part of the script. One day you become a boxer. Still following the exact amount of punishment that you could meet. And naturally, Royal Code is too much fun. Naturally, all codes have something to do with the regulation and handling of force and its direction and that sort of thing. Well, that depends on judgment. And the exact amount of force to use is the exact amount of force that will accomplish the exact effect that you consider should be accomplished. And the only places where you've considered your judgment very bad is when you've applied too much or too little. And you didn't do the job. You might say judgment, then, is valid as far as you have been able to follow Axiom 10. Okay, that's what judgment is, basically, to you. See, production of an effect. Well, the production of the correct effect desired. In other words, the expression of an intention. The expression of an intention is what that is. He wanted to make a certain effect. Well, believe it or not all effects are bad. And that simply consisted of expressing an intention. Well, that intention required that you make a certain postulate, and not too much and not too little. Probably usual force, not too much, not too little force. Probably that you utilized, altered, or changed some mass, but not too much and not too little. And if you came right there in the groove and you produced that exact effect, then you had confidence in being able to follow out Axiom 10. See, Axiom 10, the production of an effect. You had confidence that you could produce an effect. And I'll show you the exact way to reach judgment. Exact way to reach judgment is to just rehabilitate confidence of the production of a proper effect. That's all. Because one of the fundamental laws that is above all other laws is Axiom 10. It's just a law like everything else. You say, what's this game all about in this universe? Well, the game in this universe is production of an effect. Well, the production of the intended effect would be in obedience to that law. See? You intend an effect, and you produce it. And that obeys it. Got the idea? So if you're going to have that law at all, why, the production of an effect would be the production of the intended effect, not some other effect. And you will become free to the degree that you have confidence in producing the effect you intended to produce. Right? So therefore, in Dianetics, when you intended, in Scientology, when you intended to produce a certain effect on the PC, and you didn't produce it, your judgment worsened. Right? But when you intended to produce
a certain effect and produced it, you figured you're a pretty good auditor. All right. Therefore, I invite you to follow through any such line as this with caution and simply walk yourself upscale to a number of wins. Now, I'm telling you that this, that, and the other thing will do this, that, and the other thing for PCs. And as you have noticed, my summer without a central organization hanging around my neck at St. Hill has not been without certain results. There have been certain techniques, know-hows produced here, which you're getting the full benefit of. Now, those techniques and know-how actually are adequate at this time simply to pull the floor out from underneath any PC. Now, you want to hurt somebody's aberrations? Well, you don't hurt the PC. You mess up his aberrations. To mess them up, then you'd better use, this sounds horrible, but you had better use a technique which you know will produce that effect. Well, of course, that requires experience, which is to say familiarity. Now, possibly all right for me to tell you to sit here in this class and produce a lot of OTs, but as far as an auditor is concerned, I would rather tell you to produce a lot of effects that you intend to produce. You've got to hear better judgment, don't you see? Now, I've gotten so cocky of recent years, particularly during the last year, on healing up somebody's sciatica or straightening out somebody's left auricle. This is just not necessarily intending to straighten it out from here to the end of the time track, you understand? But getting a good, stable release of the situation right then. Stabilizing them up, knocking them out so they don't have that particular illness, so forth. I've gotten so cocky in this particular direction that I would say offhand, medicine, ha! What you want it for, see? There are certain biochemical products, endocrinological effects, possibly certain surgical or obstetrical effects that could be produced in the field of medicine. Very possibly, some guy's arm is hurting him. You cut it off, it doesn't hurt him anymore. But I've begun to believe that the answer isn't in physical manipulation. In any illness, the answer is not in physical manipulation. I see somebody's infection cured up very nicely. Somebody's infection is all cured up and so forth, and he's okay now, isn't he? And then 5 years goes by and the thing finishes out the rest of the cycle of action. Yeah, you cure up this fellow's superating ear and he's all straight and his ear's all cured up and so forth. This is an absence of any other processing, you see, than just putting medication and squirting him and killing off bugs and doing this and that. And then he goes up the track a ways and all of a sudden he has this strange illness that nobody can quite diagnose. Well, the strange illness that he has that nobody can quite diagnose is, of course, the remainder of the cycle of action of the illness that was started and cured earlier. And that's it. And it appears in many peculiar versions. No, the answer lies not in cure at all. The answer lies in resolving a person's desire to be ill. And everybody, even the medicos, would tell you why. They'd say, I've been just correct about this. No, that's for years.
Yes, with any medicine, much better than church medicine. Not for years.
Well, they've known it for years. Why the hell didn't they do something about it? Because you can't prevent illness, physical illness, with other physical means.
Get the idea?
You can't prevent physical illness. Because illness is basically a creative function. The person's mocked himself up in illness. Now, you're going to cure somebody's mock-ups by shooting him, excuse me, lady, shooting him the butt with a 10-inch needle? You're not going to cure any mock-ups that way. I can absolutely assure you. You're going to give him another mock-up. You get the idea. Oh, don't be so shocked. That's not the way to cure mock-ups. Actually, you can do some weird things with mock-ups by physiological reaction. Just rapidly, I tell you, you can make somebody's mock-ups 8 times as big as life with physical manipulation. You can take oxygen, for instance, pure oxygen, slap it on somebody's nose and let him breathe nothing else for quite a little while. Keep the cigarettes away from him, because if he explodes, of course, he'll blow up like a punctured balloon. If he's got a couple of steel teeth and clicks them together, he's had it, you know. But you would be fascinated at how many pictures he sees. Hey, oxygen does something to pictures. Well, that's fine. That's fine. CO2 does something to pictures. You take an awful lot of CO2, don't take it in the ice version, and stuff it into somebody's lungs, he's going to see a lot of pictures. Something's going to happen to the pictures of the case, that's for sure. And you take a lot of cyanide gas and push it into his lungs, he's going to see a lot of pictures. In fact, you can make people see a lot of pictures. Now, you can give somebody old-time dianazine, which consists of enormous quantities of calcium, enormous quantities of ascorbic acid, and vitamin B1, maybe a few little other things to put edges on it. You can give him a lot of these, just cram him full. You can actually move him through some rather fantastically chronic engrams. He just moves to a different place in the engram. It does something to cancer. I don't know what. I don't say it cures cancer. It just does something to it. Skin cancer and things like that, I've seen it turn on a PC, just giving them doses of this stuff. And then it runs out. Fellow's had kind of a poor skin before. He winds up with a fairly good skin. If you don't carry it on through to a full course, of course, the other factor involves nicotinic acid is the main thing that does this. If you don't carry it through to a full course of it, you leave him hung up in something. And a full course is nicotinic acid turns on so many hot flashes and all kinds of other things with him, and it's so damned uncomfortable, if you'll excuse me, that finishing up a course is highly unlikely. Got the idea? Well, you talk about physical manipulation. Talk to you a few minutes ago about swami work. Well, man, there's nothing to it if you want somebody to see pictures or change physical form or something like that. All you do is utilize the other determinism on the case, considering it stronger than the PC, and bring about a result through hypnotism. All you've got to do is lower the responsibility of somebody to zero, and you've got him hypnotized. That's the total action of hypnotism. Just explain to somebody carefully over a long period of time how he's not responsible for anything, and he'll eventually go flutter bang. That's the exact mechanism of hypnotism. And of course you can change the physical form of the body one way or the other. It's nothing much to this. You can hypnotize. It doesn't even take any time to hypnotize somebody. And the reason they don't hypnotize everybody is because hypnotists are just chicken.
That's right. They're scared. They're cowards. You don't realize how far you got to go sometimes. And it's of no real value, no value at all. It improves the forces and masses of the body, maybe, but totally at the expense of the PC. There's nothing there if you haven't got a PC there, so why bother to shift the mass around, you know? You can make a girl look twice as good in some fashion, physically. Make this Thetan's body look nicer physically. Thetan, however, after that, going around in a total fog. What good's a body? Oh, if you want to decorate the universe, learn to be a sculptor and just sculpt up some bodies. You don't have to pick on Thetans. The point I'm making here is the physiological shift about and the hocus pocus and the monkey business and the overwhelming and all of that sort of stuff. Well, I could have told you this years ago, and it most would have been opinion, or you would have assigned it to my own penchant or something of the sort. But today I've had to face this whole question all over again. I find out that, sure, somebody's got a broken leg, for God's sakes, put a splint on it. He's bleeding to death, why put a tourniquet on him? Patch him up. Hook him together and for God's sakes, process it out if you want him to get any place. Because he's the one that had the broken leg. He's the one that got the broken leg, and it's very unpalatable. And you needn't go telling the public this, that each fellow is carrying with him his own self-germinated germ of destruction. It's an awful thing to saddle people with. You just take somebody who's not a Scientologist and hasn't ever come up 2 inches and has got no reality on nowhere and say, well, you know that operation you had there in 1949? And, I said, oh, yeah, sure, all right. He said, well, you mucked the whole thing up. Did it yourself, exclusively, totally. That was just you. That was nobody else. You know, you won't buy it. And yet, actually, the only way out of it is for him to process it from that viewpoint. Old Dianetics worked because covertly the person was taking responsibility for having done it. And quite incidentally, in erasing the engram, you erased his overts in the engram itself, somehow or another, and it worked itself out and came on up the line. Well, that's rather clumsy compared to what we do now. You could simply sit a fellow down and say, think of an overt against a woman, thank you. Think of an overt against a woman, thank you. Think of an overt against a woman, you know, or think something you've done to a woman. Think something you might have done to a woman or anything like that. You know, any overt, any way you want to phrase it, and just call it over and over and over in the bank and just start stripping off one way. Yeah. There it goes. Fellow says, I've got a nice, great, big, juicy engram here, and they're killing me, and they're hanging me, and killing him and hanging him be damned. He'd have to cooperate across the board to get killed and hanged. And he says, they're killing me and hanging me. And you say, all right. Now, the Scientologists simply say, well, let's get your overts off of this. He'd strip them down, and all of a sudden the picture goes. He doesn't have to experience the whole picture and be hanged all over again the way he did in Dianetics. Now, the difference between taking responsibility for being the cause of it and not is that you keep on going through the same incident if you don't take the cause point on it. You have to relive it and re-experience it and re-this or that and re-so and so on. Well, you can just kiss this one goodbye the second that you can get a PC to take cause. As soon as he starts taking the cause, you find out that he's plotting all the way through this hanging, you see. plotting at this and plotting at that and plotting at the other thing and so on. It's easier to do if you say, where'd the hanging take place? I don't know. This planet. Well, what country was it? Well, that doesn't matter much. This planet. You say, good. Well, now, think of an overt against this planet. This is stupidly simple as that. His track with regard to this planet frees up. His memory restores, and he snaps back into power again. Now, you're erasing overts, however, I call to your attention. You're erasing overts. You're not necessarily rehabilitating a person's judgment. Got the idea? So, what effect could you or would you be willing to produce on this planet that you think you could produce on this planet? That's a very long, clumsy auditing command. They're much better ones, but I'm just trying to give you the full, horrible substance of exactly what an Axiom 10 command would be. What effect, you know, he's got this hanging, and he said it's this planet. What effect would you be willing to produce on this planet that you could produce on this planet? That's not an auditing man. That's just the substance of what you'd have to ask me. And after a while, he says, what effect? Oh, man. Oh, wow. Oh, no. Oh, let's see. If I was down at the beach, and there was a footprint in the beach, I could probably blow a grain of sand a quarter of an inch across the footprint. Yeah, I could produce that effect, I guess. Now, with that process, he comes up with judgment as the final product. Get the idea? You give him exercise in judgment and so forth, and he starts letting go of all the laws that restrain him. So that type of process is in itself both a necessary ingredient to the making of OT, just the restoration of judgment, not that process particularly. The restoration of judgment is a necessary ingredient to the making of OTs. And practice in re-estimating effects. Now, we'll attain this. And those things are pretty necessary to what you're doing. Somebody's got to get back to that. The odd part of it is he won't erase the laws until he thinks he's got judgment. He's got to have some judgment. Nothing I'm telling you here is upsetting anything you're doing. I'm just telling you that there's a further ingredient. This answers the age-old puzzle of how does the PC become aberrated? Well, he becomes aberrated by plotting it up himself. To restrain himself from breaking his own ideas of proper moral conduct. In the absence of moral codes, why he substitutes them for himself. And although he'll live whole lives of being lawless, he sooner or later returns himself to being a monk. Got the idea? And he runs various miscompensations for this sort of thing, and eventually winds up in a fairly aberrated condition. But judgment, not trustworthiness so much, but just judgment of being able to create effects which match up to an optimum solution, is in itself an adequate rehabilitation for a thing, and would of itself bring him back up to OT, no matter what process, type, or route did it. Okay? Thank you.